Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's program. And today's program is being done in partnership with Longevity Foundation, Lung Cancer Research Foundation, and Cancer Care. And the title for today's program is Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer for Caregivers, Practical Tips for Coping. This is part three of Living with Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer. And today's program is supported by Regeneron, Bristol-Myers Squibb, and supported by a grant from Genentech. And we really want to thank them for their support of this program. Now, before I introduce the first speaker, I'm going to do a few things. First of all, we have over 150 participants on the program today, and you come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Colombia and the United Kingdom. So it's really a global call. And again, this is part three of a three-part series on living with non-small cell lung cancer. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Robert Su. And Dr. Su is Assistant Professor of Clinical Medicine, Division of Medical Oncology, USC NARS Comprehensive Cancer Center. And Dr. Su will be addressing overview of non-small cell lung cancer, the important role of the caregiver in communicating with the healthcare team, and the caregiver's role in decision-making for a loved one with non-small cell lung cancer. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Su.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, for the introduction. And I want to thank Cancer Care, Longevity, Lung Cancer Research Foundation, along with the other sponsors for being here today. And most importantly, I want to thank the caregivers who are on the call today, along with the patients who are on the call. Regarding kind of non-small cell lung cancer, we've been fortunate to see great progress, in the field of non-small cell lung cancer. So non-small cell lung cancer is, among lung cancers, consists of 85% of lung cancers. And the most common types of non-small cell lung cancers are adenocarcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma. Typically, how we diagnose non-small cell lung cancer is through a tissue biopsy, so it might be done through a scope that goes into your lungs in which they biopsy the mass, or sometimes it's done other radiologic methods such as a CT, a guided biopsy. And I think the most important things for everyone to know about a patient's non-small cell lung cancer is, to know the extent of the cancer, which, the medical term we use is staging, which we can obtain this by imaging. And then with the research advances that we've had over the past 20 years, really to know not just kind of that it's non-small cell lung cancer, to not just know that it's, say, adenocarcinoma, but to know the genomics of the tumor, in which we do something that's called next generation sequencing or molecular testing, which they can sequence the tumor's DNA and RNA and also do some protein staining, in which we can figure out the biomarkers to tailor therapy. And so, there are different kinds of therapy, local therapies, depending on the staging, if it's, it can include surgery, radiation, and then systemic therapies, which can include things like chemotherapy, targeted therapy, and immunotherapy, and targeted therapy actually many times being a pill. So you can imagine, based on all this information that many times that we have to give at the initial visit with the patient and family, really, then caregiver, really it makes the role of a caregiver really important to help with the patient's care and communicating with us as a healthcare team. And so, Certainly, you know, the caregiver's role is really multifaceted. I mean, it goes from things like all the logistics to appointments, appointments to see us in the clinic, lab work, any treatments, if there are any infusions, but also kind of, you know, being the eyes and ears for us as a healthcare team. We see the patients, but we only see them in the clinic frequently, and so as a result, we only get a snapshot of what the patient is going through. And certainly, if the patient is feeling well, they may be able to give us a good account about their day to day. But the patient is not feeling well, you know, it really heightens the importance of the caregiver to really help tell us, you know, in terms of, you know, are there any changes to daily tasks and things like that. And I think with all the treatment complexities, you know, another aspect that the caregiver is really important is to help, you know, help us with, you know, making sure that patients kind of understand what's going on, because, you know, we try to give as much information and try to explain it as clearly as possible, but it's very difficult to be able to absorb all this information as, you know, both at initial kind of treatment and even as we go along with therapy, it's still very tough to keep track of. And so, you know, the caregiver can do a great job in terms of helping organize this. And then, as you know, certainly with all this comes, you know, certainly a lot of, you know, emotional, sometimes, you know, emotions. And so I think the caregiver, you know, being someone, you know, the patient's loved one, can certainly help us a lot with emotional support, because even though we try our best as a healthcare team to be as compassionate and we care about all the patients we care for, you know, for patients, especially when they first see us at the beginning, you know, they don't know us. And so the caregiver can help with some of the emotional support for the patient. But I also want to highlight that, you know, I think it's important to not put all these things on just one caregiver. I think it's important to have a team of people, if possible, to take care of the patient. It's not uncommon for me when I'm caring for patients to actually see a different friend or family member at each visit with the patient, because I think it's important, you know, given that many caregivers still have to, you know, they still have, you know, work or other family members or other friends that they may also have to care for. It's important to make sure that, you know, there's this, not to avoid burnout within for one caregiver or, and so it's important, I think, that if possible, to have a team. And even as us as a healthcare team, we try to, you know, try to be a team. You know, our own healthcare team, you know, it's myself, but I also have a nurse practitioner, I have a lung navigator. And, you know, my other members of the healthcare team frequently help me sometimes with some of these things in terms of trying to help clarify information to patients and their caregiver team, and also sometimes help with, you know, emotional support, especially given that many times I have to give a lot of technical information, you know, about the disease and about the treatments, that, you know, the emotional support can be kind of difficult to see when all this information is given. And so I rely on other members of the healthcare team to help, you know, make sure that our patients feel emotionally supported. In terms of like decision making, you know, for a caregiver's role, I think, you know, a couple of things. I think it's important for the caregiver to have an understanding of the patient's kind of mindset in terms of goals of treatment. You know, one of the things kind of early on, I think, is obviously once we can, you know, patients can get some sort of understanding about their cancer, is to really try to, you know, talk with the patient and see, you know, what they're aiming for, because, you know, if at some point, you know, the patient is unable to have the capacity to make a decision, that really then, you know, we rely on what we call medical decision makers to help with helping us, you know, make a decision making. And so I think it's really important that, you know, caregiver and patient and us as a healthcare team all like try to have a good understanding of what the goals of care and treatment will be. And I also think it's important, you know, also, you know, for the caregiver to really, have a good sense in terms of the overall kind of, feelings, the patient, because many times patients might not be feeling well and may not express their feelings that day. And I think the caregiver, if they're able to get a good sense of that, that really will go a long way to making sure that we do the right thing. And the right thing is not necessarily always, it's different for everyone. It's more the right thing to us is we want to do what the patient's wishes are. And so, that's where, if the caregiver is able to have those conversations with the patient early on, it can be really helpful in terms of making sure that we kind of do the treatments that will treat the non-small cell lung cancer, but do it in a way that that is, to the patient's wishes. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Sue. That was an outstanding presentation. Stellar. And because you are the first speaker, you really are setting the stage for today's program. So I really want to thank you. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos. And Dr. Palos is her own healthcare team. She's the Doctor of Public Health, Masters in Social Work, and an RN. And she's former Clinical Protocol Administration Manager, Office of Clinical of Cancer Survivorship, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, author and researcher in caregiving, survivorship, healthcare disparities, and survivorship. And Dr. Palos will be addressing what research tells us about caregivers, challenges in communicating with the healthcare team, and challenges and rewards of caregiving, coping with each day, on special occasions, birthdays, and managing family and friends. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Palos.
Okay. So thank you for that introduction. Dr. Sue, I'd just like to say thank you for being such a model provider. You are the kind of provider that all patients and their caregivers hope to receive. And I hope you're teaching a lot of your residents and fellows and colleagues how to communicate with the caregiver and their family. So I'm honored to join this esteemed panel and our colleagues from our collaborating supporters and, of course, our amazing participants. The holidays can be a time of reflection, connection, and sometimes challenges, especially when navigating the cancer experience. Today, I'll share some practical tips and resources to help our caregivers and our families and our patients cope and find comfort during this time. Now, many of you joining this session are already familiar with the diverse range of physical and emotional effects experienced by your loved ones, the patients, the caregivers, and family. These effects are not just imaginary. They are lived realities for many, and perhaps some of you are now encountering these challenges right now. Today, I'm going to briefly address three areas that are being currently explored in caregiver research. I'd like to begin with the challenges in communicating with the healthcare team and expand a bit on Dr. Hsu's discussion on the role of the caregiver in communicating with the team. This topic often focuses, or maybe sometimes politely overlooks it, on the barriers and challenges that influence communication between patients, caregivers, and providers. Several studies have examined patient-provider communication and its role in affecting patient outcomes. Research demonstrates that patients and their families often perceive information provided by the healthcare team as unclear, insufficient, and confusing. So effective patient healthcare team communication is essential to obtain quality care. And again, multiple studies have shown that effective communication during medical encounters are strongly linked to patient satisfaction and various health outcomes. So a review of the literature indicates there are several barriers that contribute to ineffective communication during the medical encounter. And I'm going to summarize a few of these, which would include the provider's workload and time pressure. Sometimes they have to move quickly because there are so many patients they have to see. Much of the time they want to spend more time, but it's hard because they have other patients there waiting. There's managing the language problems. there's delivering bad news. How do you deliver bad news to someone that you've seen for, you know, 2-3 years and you know the family and all of that? So, or, you know, how do you sit down with someone to give them some news like that? And the decision-making, Dr. Sue talked a little bit about that and made the case that it's important for the family to get involved in that. There's also the lack of or limited knowledge about cancer. Many of the patients and our family members don't understand. They can nod their head, yes, 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 but that doesn't necessarily always mean they understand. It can mean that they're being polite, or they can mean that, you know, they don't really understand and are too embarrassed to ask the questions. There's also traditional and religious values that come into play, and then the stigmatization and fatalism that, again, affect communication. Patients, though, are also notably concerned about frequent interruptions during their appointments. These range from someone knocking on the door to verbal interjections to beeper alerts to doctors or providers using computers, all of which disrupt communication. So let's move on to the second research area, and that's growing concern about how loneliness, social isolation, and grief influence caregivers, their families, and our patients. Recent studies show that these three areas are associated with adverse health outcomes, and these factors can elevate the risk of malnutrition, unhealthy behaviors, anxiety, and additional health challenges. Caregivers often experience anticipatory or complicated grief, which can really increase during times like this, during our holidays or other special events. Now, despite evidence of how these three things can increase cancer caregivers' risk, there's very limited research on this area, and so more study is needed to develop effective programs and support. The third topic that's been coming up concerns intergenerational caregiving, and it examines how responsibilities and decisions are shaped across generations and cultures. Family members still bear most caregiving duties, a trend intensified by the shifts in family structures and generational divides. These changes make ongoing care more challenging, so that has led to the emergence of new groups of caregivers. For example, there's growing research on how children and adolescents are stepping up as cancer caregivers. Many children and adolescents, known as YCs or young caregivers, play a significant role in supporting patients. Despite their contribution, they're often overlooked by healthcare team members. When these young individuals are acknowledged, you know, professionals are often remain uncertain about what's the best way to support them. So unlike adult caregivers, young caregivers are commonly viewed solely as the young people dealing with a family member's illness rather than as the caregiver themselves. So again, it's necessary to conduct more research in this area to provide support for our caregivers. Family members do play a crucial role in decision-making process for patients. Regrettably, caregivers don't always know how to support decision-making. Caregivers often struggle to understand the patient's condition and quality of life, complicating their support role. While shared decision-making can help, it traditionally focuses on the patient and the physician. Expanding this approach to include the families is recommended, as differences can exist between patients and their families regarding the desired involvement in treatment discussion. So basically, open discussion about the status of their loved ones are beneficial, and providers can initiate conversations about how that status may differ across the trajectory of the cancer experience. A quick word about considerations for long-distance caregivers. Long-distance caregivers are also often overlooked, even though they face unique challenges. Because they do not live nearby, they must make extra effort to stay informed about their loved one's situation and needs. These caregivers will be helped if they organize important information, choose key, identify their contacts, and keep records up to date. Now, these caregivers can also experience guilt, stress, or loneliness. So it's crucial to support the long-distance caregivers so that they can manage these difficulties effectively. Now, Chris Tidal and Ms. Zuberdak and Ms. Monica will provide critical information on programs and resources to cope with the stresses and rewards of being a caregiver for a patient diagnosed with non-small cell cancer. So I'd just like to spend a few moments sharing tips on how to manage caregiving during special family celebrations and holidays. It is well known that cancer caregivers and their families face tremendous stress during special events such as the current holidays, and the uncertainty and the chaos that always seem to pop up come back up even more so during these times. I'm sure that many of you on this call have experienced surprises, challenges, and come up with solutions and have experienced rewards during the recent holidays like Thanksgiving, and maybe you're going through some right now. So I'd like to cover a strategy that I hope will manage the chaos or help manage the chaos associated with these occasions. One helpful strategy is to develop a special occasion preparedness plan. This plan is like a hurricane or a tornado preparation plan. It maps out the details on how to prepare for those special events. This plan can make trade-offs and the roles of the caregiver and the family members and the patient when it's important when caring for a loved one during special occasions. Be realistic about what can or cannot be done. Be flexible about traditions and customs associated with family gatherings or holidays. For example, if your home was a hub of such activities, it might be time to make changes. Ask another family member to host the event or to help host the event. You can even invite fewer guests. It won't be so tiring for the family, for the patient, and for you as the caregiver. You can prepare video clips of past holidays, and these clips provide a snapshot of the memories from the past. And if you don't have the expertise for video clips, then just bring out the old photo albums. People love to look at the albums to remember the good times that were there and other things that bring good memories to them. Remember, you can create new traditions. Even if you cannot be there in person, some other activities can become new traditions for you, your loved one, and your family. And then just to highlight a few practical approaches, in this time and age, we all have been asked about virtual appointments or do we want them, do we not want them. I'd like to encourage you to use available technology, use phone calls, use video chats, use messaging apps, or specialized caregiver platforms to maintain frequent communication with your family member, with your healthcare team, and other family members involved in their care. Organize and keep information readily available and updated. These documents can include medical records, emergency contacts, healthcare providers lists, so that way it can be shared very quickly and easily. Designate a primary contact person who can coordinate information between all parties, healthcare team members, local caregivers, and family members. And then schedule regular updates and a consultation with the healthcare providers to stay informed about your loved one's condition and any changes in their care plan. And I'd also really encourage folks and recommend folks to visit the websites of the organizations supporting cancer patients and their families. These groups have a library of easy-to-read, brief, and informative resources, such as tip sheets for how to communicate with your healthcare team, checklists for preparing for a visit to your clinic, or for taking travel. Several cancer groups also provide support groups, counseling, and online communities. Do not be reluctant to ask for help. It's important for you to navigate this journey with the help of others. And I like what Dr. Jesus said about have a whole team of caregivers. That's what it's all about, sharing the diagnosis. A diagnosis of small cell lung cancer presents particularly complex challenges due to the unique nature of this disease. However, it's important to remember that there are valuable resources and knowledgeable experts available to help guide the patients, caregivers, and providers. Navigating cancer, regardless of its type, is never something that you should do in isolation if it can be helped. I encourage caregivers, patients, and providers alike to reach out for support. Whether it's a family member, a friend, or even an unexpected acquaintance who who crosses your path during this time. Accepting help and connection can make a meaningful difference. It is often more than coincidence that can bring certain individuals into your life as you move through your journey. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my remarks today. And Dr. Messner, I'd like to return the program back to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Palos. It's just a superb presentation, really stellar in every way. And you gave so many important tips to everybody and helpful thoughts. I'm sure that there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Ansish Stegall, and Ms. Stegall is an RN, BSN. She's Senior Vice President, Patient Services and Healthcare Delivery, Longevity Foundation. And she'll be addressing Longevity Foundation's free national programs and services, and we'll also talk to you about their website as well. It's my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Ansish Stegall.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thank you to Cancer Care and the Lung Cancer Research Foundation. We certainly value our partnerships with Cancer Care and our other advocacy partners as well. Longevity is a global nonprofit lung cancer advocacy foundation really dedicated to transforming the way people live with lung cancer. We have multiple verticals within our foundation. We do a lot of research. We actually provide investigative grants to young investigators. We have in-house researchers who conduct non-therapeutic patient-facing studies as well as studies with caregivers. We have a very strong policy department that really works within Capitol Hill and in local governments to improve policies that will benefit lung cancer survivorship. We do work in collaboration with other national agencies and as well as with other foundations to bring these policy changes to be reality. We have an early lung cancer center, which is dedicated to moving the needle back on early detection. It's grounded in screening and in early diagnosis, in early reflexive testing of biomarkers to really improve outcomes for patients across the spectrum of lung cancer, but particularly to get people diagnosed earlier. And then we have our patient and survivorship programs, and this is what Dr. Messner was alluding to. We have multiple free resources throughout our website in the form of information, our gateways, which are an entry point into our website, have lots of current information on all of the different aspects of non-small cell lung cancer. We have a helpline that is answered by a person and then directs you to get whatever resources you need. That number, and it will be available at the end of the presentation as well, is 844-360-5864. We will make peer-to-peer connections for folks who would like to have a mentor or if you are contemplating clinical trial enrollment and would like more information about clinical trials or to talk with someone who has participated in clinical trials, those connections can be made for you as well. And we would encourage caregivers to call these numbers. You know, it's not just for patients. We want to involve our caregivers as much as possible when we share these resources, and we know that our caregivers are oftentimes the information piece for the loved one that they're caring for. We have virtual meetups that are online support groups where people join by Zoom calls so that they actually get to see each other. They become very friendly with each other. They share information. And then we do have our in-person event, which we call our Hope Summit, which will be held in Dallas May 1st through the 3rd this year. And many of these folks that know each other from our Facebook communities or from our virtual meetups will join together at Hope Summit to really get together face-to-face as a community. So we have lots of social media connections and communities online that can be joined by caregivers and patients as well. We provide Facebook Live events, webinars, and also have in-person screening events throughout the United States. So always just look for our logo and go to longevity, LUNGEVITY.org at any time to find these resources. Thank you so much, and I'll turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Thank you so much, Ms. Stegall. Just was a wonderful presentation, a wonderful resource for our participants on the call today. So please do take advantage of this wonderful resource for all of you. And our next speaker is Beth Zabadek, and she's an oncology social worker, master's degree in social work, and she's manager of community engagement, patient education and support, Lung Cancer Research Foundation. And she'll be addressing the Lung Cancer Research Foundation's free programs and services and their website and all the other services they offer. It's my pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Zabadek.
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Carolyn, and everyone at Cancer Care for the opportunity to speak today and introduce the resources and engagement opportunities available at Lung Cancer Research Foundation. Like was shared, my name is Beth Zabradak. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I'm the voice on the other side of the LCRF support line. At LCRF, research is our middle name. We take pride in supporting the latest and greatest in lung cancer research. LCRF funds research for the prevention, early detection, diagnosis, treatment, and ultimately the cure of lung cancer. A little bit about my role. I have the privilege of spending my day connecting with patients, care partners, and healthcare professionals who reach out through the support line to provide support, resources, or to be a listening ear as they navigate any stage of the lung cancer diagnosis. In addition to providing emotional support, I have personalized resource guides on a variety of topics that I'm able to provide based upon the individual's needs, as well as our complimentary educational material or our live webinar links. Really anything to ensure that callers know that support is available and ongoing through LCRF. I'm available by phone or email as often as callers need me, and I'm honored to walk side by side with so many. Support looks different for everyone, and resources needed are dependent on everyone's situation. My role within LCRF allows me to provide personalized resources, support, and care to everyone who reaches out through our support line. As I briefly noted, LCRF offers complimentary educational materials to patients, care partners, and healthcare professionals that are available for download or shipping and available in English and Spanish. You can learn more about the subjects and materials available on our website or by reaching out to me directly. But following today's conversation, I want to especially highlight our Caregiving for a Loved One with Lung Cancer booklet that is available as a resource, as well as our Caregiver Support Resource Guide. LCRF knows the importance of the role caregivers play in the lung cancer journey, and we want to ensure each of you know that we are here to support you. Thank you for taking a moment to learn about LCRF, and please reach out to me at support@lcrf.org or 844-835-4325 with any questions or if you would like to learn more about the resources and support offered. You can also visit our website at lcrf.org for more information on anything shared today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Zabadek. Just a wonderful presentation. Again, a wonderful resource for all of our participants today. So thank you so much for your presentation. And now we're going to move on. Before we move on, let's see, we have more speaker. Christina Monaco, who's a master's degree in social work, and she's an oncology social worker at Cancer Care, and she'll be discussing self-care tips for managing the stress of caregiving, and Cancer Care's free national programs and services, our Hope Line and website. It's my pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Monaco.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thank you to everyone who's here today, both presenting and listening in. As Dr. Messner mentioned, my name is Christina Monaco, and I'm an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care. So as we've spoken about today, caregiving can look, feel, and mean many different things. So it could be hands-on tasks like managing appointments or medications, or it can just be offering emotional support near or far. No matter what your role looks like, there is no right or wrong way to be a caregiver, and any effort you're putting in is more than enough. And as caregiving evolves, relationships and family roles might shift, responsibilities can change, and routines or traditions might no longer look the way that they once did. And so while caregiving can be deeply meaningful, it can also be very overwhelming. So many caregivers, as mentioned, might experience burnout or the long-term emotional impact of carrying intense responsibility like that. Burnout can show up physically or emotionally. That could be through fatigue, stress, changes in sleep or mood, or simply feeling depleted. But as we're talking about it, there are ways to help manage stress. I know when caregivers hear the phrase self-care, it often brings up a lot of guilt. We don't feel like we're the ones who need care at this time. But self-care is not selfish. It is productive. It helps to keep your gas tank full enough to continue showing up for your loved one. Self-care does not have to mean expensive massages or bubble baths, although it can. But it can be as simple as carving out 10 minutes a day to read, stepping outside for fresh air, staying organized with medical or household tasks to avoid some of that overwhelm, or reaching out for support through counseling, support groups, or trusted friends. Setting boundaries and giving yourself permission to say yes to your needs, even when that means saying no to others, is also a powerful tool. All these strategies require checking in with yourself and staying attuned to what you need, though. So mindfulness and grounding techniques can really help with this. So for example, things like box breathing, which is breathing in for 4 seconds, holding for 4 seconds, breathing out for 4 seconds, holding for another 4, and doing that 3 to 5 times. Or the 5 senses exercise. So that's naming 5 things that you can see, 4 things that you feel or can touch, 3 things that you can hear, 2 things that you can smell, and 1 thing that you can taste. Or simply placing your feet firmly on the floor to bring your awareness back to the present moment. So all of these are tools for grounding yourself, coming back into yourself when life feels very overwhelming. And through all of this, I encourage you to be patient and kind to yourself. Remember that you are doing more than enough. And so some caregivers might find it helpful to check in daily using a simple 0 to 5 scale to notice how they're feeling emotionally or physically, or to reflect on a few qualities that they've discovered about themselves through this experience. All of that can help to bring some of the rewarding meaning back to caregiving. And of course, Cancer Care offers various support services for caregivers. So we offer individual counseling and Zoom support groups for caregivers living in New York and New Jersey. But we also offer national online support groups, which are facilitated by oncology social workers and broken down by diagnosis or relationship type, including lung cancer caregiver support groups or partner spouse caregiver support groups, among others. Cancer Care also provides resource navigation, educational workshops like this one, the Cancer Out Loud podcast, and other resources and community programs. You can find more information at our website, cancercare.org, or by calling our Hope Line at 1-800-813-4673. We're here to help. So thank you again for your time and attention, and thank you, Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Monica. That was a wonderful presentation and wonderful resource as well for participants. So you have like 3 organizations that you can really get a lot of help from. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. I'm going to ask Bella to bring all of our speakers on board. I'm going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. These are Bella, do you want to explain to our participants how to queue up the questions?
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Messner. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So this is a question for Dr. Apollos. Can you name the 5 things to help with stress reduction, reducing with stress reduction?
Certainly, and I know that other speakers on this call can also contribute to this. The one that has been mentioned is the deep breathing. That helps quite a bit. So I think that exercise that you were given by Ms. Monaco of how to reduce some of that stress was very good and very simple and easy to do. The other one is prayer, of course. Many people, you know, really feel a sense of relief after prayer, and that, you know, what doesn't have to be in a faith-based building. It can be in your home, it can be in the garage, it can be in the basement. Just take a moment and say a prayer to yourself. That also helps. There's also meditation, and meditation doesn't mean getting into a yoga stance or anything like that. It can just mean taking a moment to just settle yourself. You can just relax your body and visualize something that will make you happy, whatever that happy area is, just to get away from what is causing the stress for a moment. You don't have to do it for 30 minutes. You don't have to do it for an hour. Even a brief 5 minutes or 3 minutes, if that's all the time you have, to just pull yourself away from the stress and detach for a second and to do that. And then I'm sure if our other speakers have some other ways, I encourage them to bring it up. But that's at least three ways that you can do it. The other thing that I've had patients tell me, they just sing. They don't know how to sing. They don't know the words, but they listen to music. So music may also be a way to reduce some of that stress. Studies are showing that music really helps in certain areas, like for our dementia patients. They know that that's been helping to bring back good memories and trigger things like that. So music is another way. So those, very briefly, are some things that you can do. It doesn't cost anything except you taking the time to do some self-care. Hope that helps.
Excellent. Thank you. Anyone else want to add to that?
Yeah, I think I would add, I just want to highlight, I think, a couple of things. I think certainly exercise, I try to encourage patients, to try to do some sort of physical activity. I think it not only helps with, I think, mentally, but also helps physically, especially if they're undergoing certain treatments. And I know there's sometimes this stigma about, if I'm getting treatment and such, do I need to avoid exercise? And I actually tell them, I actually encourage exercising, because, in terms of any physical activity, I think does help in terms of, I think, from a both a mental and a physical well-being standpoint. And I think the other thing that I think is important is to find, to find hobbies, find things to, activities that, for patients to do. I think it's very easy to get very preoccupied and have thoughts that run into your mind about whether it's, the treatment or the disease itself. And I think, being able to have hobbies is a good way to kind of think about something else. Because ultimately what we're trying to do is to allow patients to be able to do things that they want to do in life, want to do fun things and such. And so I really encourage patients to really look for hobbies and to do physical activity.
Excellent. Ms. Monaco, do you want to take this question? Where can I get in contact with someone to talk to outside of friends and family? I know the Cancer Center offers social work services, but I don't want to go to the same place where my mother is receiving care. Could you comment on that, Ms. Monaco?
Sure, absolutely. And I think that's a very valid concern, not wanting to talk to somebody in the same place where your loved one is being treated. Sometimes you might want to talk about the place where your loved one is being treated. But going to them to ask for resources can be very helpful, because they might know places that are more local where you might be able to have virtual or in-person support. I mentioned that our individual counseling is for New York and New Jersey because that's where our social workers are licensed. So finding a place that's local to you would be helpful. You can also always call us at Cancer Care, and we can help refer you to other resources. But starting at a hospital social worker or a patient navigator might be a helpful place to start looking for support groups or individual counseling.
Excellent. This is a question.
Sorry, I don't know if I'm still live, but I do want to add that there are also occasionally peer matching services. If you look online by diagnosis and look up caregiving, there are other organizations that can help connect you to another caregiver. So even though it might not be professional counseling support, it is peer support, and that could be very helpful as well.
Thank you. Excellent. After my wife was diagnosed with non-small cell lung cancer, she could no. I'll give this question to Ms. Monaco. After my wife was diagnosed with non-small cell lung cancer, she could no longer work, and we lost half of our income. Our children have offered to pay for certain things and send us money, but we're both not comfortable accepting money from them. I try to tell my wife we need their help, but still she says no, and that we'll figure it out. How can I sway her to start accepting help? Ms. Monaco, do you want to address that one? It's a question that we get often.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely, and it's a really difficult thing to navigate. I think what you're already doing and starting with how you're feeling about it, I'm sure there is an immense amount of pressure of feeling like you're trying to keep this household afloat and your wife isn't necessarily meeting what you're actually needing. So having that conversation with her, unfortunately, I can't say that you can sway her, but being open about what you need, because you are equally a part of this journey as she is. And then also reaching out for resources from organizations like Cancer Care. We do offer limited financial assistance for patients, and that could help offset the cost of things surrounding a diagnosis. Utilities, transportation, groceries. So there are organizations like ours, and we could help connect you to those that can support you financially or find other sources of support for longer-term needs. But in the meantime, I think that what you're doing, being understanding of her, of course, but also just really explaining your circumstances and where you're coming from is as much as you could do.
Excellent, thank you. So, Ms. Stegall, can you recommend any online resources or support groups for caregivers?
Yes, excuse me. We at Longevity, we actually do have an online virtual meetup for caregivers, and you can access that with a registration through the longevity.org website. I would also encourage you that if you want to meet in person, that you, again, you can ask at the center where your loved one is being treated if there are any local caregiver groups. And often local churches will have support groups for caregivers as well. So I would look locally, but certainly if you want an online group, we do offer one at Longevity. And I know that you just heard that there are some peer-to-peer, and we can also arrange that as well by calling our helpline. We can connect you with another caregiver if you would like to talk with somebody one-on-one.
Thank you. And this is a question from Ms. Zabajak. What activities or methods can you recommend for reducing stress? I take care of my sister and no longer have time to work out as much as I used to.
Yeah, I think managing stress is so important. And I think it's finding those little moments. So maybe you can't work out as much as you used to, but maybe you can find smaller amounts of time to step away and get, you know, littler workouts in, or, you know, refine what that looks like. It's so important to, you know, maybe even while it feels like you can't find the time for working out, if that is your stress reliever, sometimes it is a matter of prioritizing something like that for yourself. And so while it seems impossible to fit that in your day-to-day now, maybe opening up to that about other people, that's why I think a lot of people have shared caregiving takes a village. And so maybe identifying somebody who can step in for an hour with your loved one so you can step out and get that workout in if that is your, you know, strongest source of stress relief.
Excellent. Thank you. And I'm going to ask our speakers to provide a takeaway from today's program. So I'm going to start with Dr. Sue.
Yeah,
Takeaway. Thanks.
Yeah, certainly I think it's been kind of mentioned, today, certainly it takes a village, in terms of, caregiving. But I think, this other speakers today really gave some great advice in terms of some of the resources, between, Longevity, Lung Cancer Research Foundation, Cancer Care, that there's some great resources and really, I really encourage, caregivers to just and patients to really have an open line of communication. I think, there's never such thing as a bad question or being too shy to share your thoughts. I think the more that you can communicate, I think the better we can do in terms of doing what we can do to help with, managing the disease and coping with any difficult emotions.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Palos?
Sure. We've all heard that cancer itself can, bring stress. But with the holidays, all the emotions and stress and logistical kind of barriers can intensify. So really take the time to take care of yourself and maybe encourage your whole family to take time to take care of each other and make that time a priority. I'd like to remind everyone to prioritize rest during this time, maybe not just the mindfulness technique or the exercise and all that, just rest. Rest is good during these times of unexpected chaos and confusion. Again, remember to set realistic expectation and get the help when needed. And for some folks, asking for help or accepting help, it's one of the most difficult things they've ever had to maybe think about doing. But this is a time when things are very different. So it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to accept help. It doesn't make you weaker. It doesn't make you not being able to take care of yourself. It just means that for right now, you need that help to pull you through. And I'd just like to say I appreciate all the participants. I acknowledge all your courage that you have going through this time, and I hope that your season holidays are restful and peaceful for you.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Palos. And Ms. Stegall? Ms. Stegall?
I would say that just know that you're not alone. We are all here for you. That's what advocacy does, from Cancer Care to the Lung Cancer Research Foundation, and as well as your loved one's healthcare providing team. We are all here to support you so that you are never on this journey alone.
Thank you. Thank you. Lovely. And Ms. Sabadek?
Yeah, I just want to again emphasize the importance of the role of the caregiver in the lung cancer journey. Caregiver is so important, but it's also so important that you take care of yourself. So make sure that as a caregiver, you're finding time to take those moments to refuel. And please know that support's just available for you as well as your loved ones. So reach out to advocate groups, your medical team, whoever it can to just help take care of you and love on you during this time.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much. And Ms. Monaco?
Pretty much going to be echoing what everybody said, but just to advocate for yourself as well. And for listeners, I would actually encourage you to Google the Caregiver Bill of Rights. It just reminds you that you have the right to be sad or angry or depressed. You also have the right to ask for support for yourself, including financially, for that person who asked that question. And so, just understanding and reminding yourself that you have the right to be a part of this journey and be affected by the journey and to take care of yourself. Like everybody said, you're not alone.
Excellent. That's a great suggestion. And I will suggest that everybody Google the Caregiver Bill of Rights, and we will actually send a link to that as well.
Great.
Thank you.
Great.
That's really great. Thank you. I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been phenomenal. I want to thank all our participants who really asked such great questions. Although we couldn't answer everyone's question, we attempted to answer as many of them as possible, given our time constraints. But I do want to say just a few things. Certainly, you have three organizations that you can go to. The Longevity Foundation, Lung Cancer Research Foundation, and Cancer Care. And we're all here to help you. And I think what Ms. Stegall had said is quite correct, that you are not alone, that you have three support organizations specifically to help people coping with non-small cell lung cancer, so take advantage of those resources. We will be sending a SurveyMonkey evaluation in about 10 days, and in that evaluation, it's an evaluation of the program, but it also will include all of the information about each of those resources that they gave out to all of you. So you'll have all that as well. So it's an evaluation, but it's also going to have resources, phone numbers, websites that you'll have as well at your disposal. Also, we have discovered that our participants on these programs, all throughout the programs, let us know that weekends, holidays, and are particularly difficult to reach your healthcare team. So always check with your healthcare team when they're available, weekends and holidays. Usually you can reach people during the day, but it's weekends and holidays and evenings that you often cannot reach your healthcare team. So always know how to contact your healthcare team. Also, do remember that you are not alone, that we are all here to help you. And I want to thank you all for your participation today. And I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.